Aloha, and welcome to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Servco Pacific. In each episode, we talk with some of Hawaii's most influential business, nonprofit, and cultural leaders, and ask them about the important issues facing Hawaii and its people. We'll also learn a bit about each fascinating guest and have some fun along the way. Now, the host of the Hawaii Business Podcast, Anyang Nakata.
Melly James is fearless and catalytic. In this episode, we talk about the art of persuasion in weaving shared goals, not being afraid to ask for help, and finding a symbiotic business partner. Today's episode is presented by Subaru Hawaii. Owning a Subaru goes beyond driving a reliable vehicle. Sign up for their More Love loyalty program to elevate your adventures with special offers just for owners. Visit morelove.subaruhawaii.com to learn more. Welcome, everybody. Today, I'm so pleased to welcome my friend and rock star extraordinaire, Melly James, co-founder of Mana Up.
Thanks for having me, Anyang.
I'm so excited to talk story with you. So much to talk about, right? So let's start from the very, very beginning. You are a proud Punahou alumna. So we know it's a wonderful institution, the academics, the network, all of those things. But I'd love to hear from you. What is the standout skill set or quality or memory you have from your time at Punahou that you carry with you today?
So I would also add that I am a proud Hanahaole graduate as well.
Oh, excellent.
But in terms of my formative years at Punahou, I would say one thing that really stands out to me is really to advocate for yourself. And I felt like at the school, there were many options, really incredible teachers. We had a schedule, almost like a college schedule, where you really had to pay attention to what you were doing, how you were making sure you got your homework done, and a lot of that flexibility. But I think it really helped me to advocate for myself because it was quite a competitive environment and just a lot of competing interests. And so really having that inner confidence that I was good at something, I am good at things, and that I would continue to, you know, thrive and explore and be curious about additional things that I could be good at because there were so many options there.
You know, that's really interesting because I hear you. The ability to speak up is one thing, but the ability to speak up in the right way, with the right tone, in the right space, to the right people, is so important. It's almost an art. Right? And so what I'm hearing from you is that that skill set really was instilled in you from an early age, right?
Absolutely. And understanding your audience. So I
yes.
think one thing that's really important to me, and I may be jumping ahead, is really how to create a shared vision. And I think that's as we assess who our audience is, who we're speaking to, and how we can create, you know, I've got mine and you've got yours, but how do we create collaboration that can be a win for more people than one? So that's something I really learned at the school as well.
There was something you said there. So I'm a big proponent of persuasion. Some people call it negotiation, but I think it's persuasion. How am I going to get the extra jalapenos at Subway, right?
Obviously.
In my Subway sandwich. So the ability to persuade people in an authentic way, not like a traveling salesman, mm-hmm. of our shared goals through your authenticity, your values, your words, your body language, that is a real art.
Absolutely. And I think that's been really helpful for us as we've built, you know, Mana Up, as well as you know, really with the many years that I had before building this company that we have now, is I think the sales process, and granted it's an authentic sales process, it is really looking at, you know, what is important to others. And I'm a big believer that everybody should have actually sales training somewhere in their career during, you know, as they're growing, like really take on a sales job, or whether it be at a store, at a restaurant, or actually in sales. I think that's been one of the key skill sets for me that's been really helpful, is be able to listen, be able to understand what's important to people, and be able to convey succinctly clear messages, as I stumble over the words clear messages, that can really create win.
So I believe that as well, because you learn how to put yourself in the customer's shoes, the whole customer experience, right? But getting back to our shared goal of our shared belief that everyone should have sales training, So not only am I trying to get extra jalapenos at Subway, but I believe that from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, I'm trying to get my child, my husband, my colleagues, my peers, my friends, my community to hear me and hear my message. And that's a real art, right?
It is. And you bring up a good point about community. I mean, it really is around shared goals for our community. And also, you know, sales isn't just, I'm trying to sell you something, like you're saying. It's, you know, conveying an idea, whether that be to a colleague, to a boss, to trying to get someone to want to work with you. It's really happening every day, all day long. And so, you know, I think that's just that true skill set, but being able to succinctly and clearly share that message in a way that's delightful, maybe, hopefully.
Ooh, delightful. So after Punahou, you went away, you went to Cornell, and I've always wanted to ask you, why Cornell? It's so cold.
It is cold. It's foggy too, and it's cloudy. I went to Cornell. They have an amazing hotel school, hotel administration program. And maybe in the back of my head, and really it wasn't like I went to school to learn how to work in a hotel. It really is a business degree with a hospitality focus. So I took 4 finance classes, 2 marketing classes. I mean, all the normal business classes. But I also got to take wines and service. And I'm a big believer in the concept of hospitality. And I think that's a really big missing link for a lot of people in business is, how do you create delight? How do you think about other people's needs? How do you create that positive environment that creates more openness? And so I'm really grateful for my time there. And I did go there because truly I felt like I could always get a job, not only back in Hawaii, but anywhere in the world, because there's hotels everywhere. But really also it was an amazing business degree with, again, a hospitality focus that I now really cherish more than ever now. I actually just got back from Cornell about 2 weeks ago for something called Hotel Ezra Cornell. It's where a lot of the hotel school alumni come back. The students put on this amazing 4-day conference. There's 5 of my interns from Punahou that are at Cornell now that I was just with. And it really reminded me just that importance of hospitality in anything you're doing in life. And I'm just really grateful for that.
This belief in the value of hospitality can permeate whether you're in finance, whether you're in insurance, right? Of course, obviously, if you're in hospitality, but the idea of putting yourself in the customer's shoes, service to others, excellence, and all of that put together, I actually didn't know that that is a passion of yours. And I always want to know, why did she go to Cornell? Because the one thing you didn't mention is you have not only are you an alum of Cornell, you, I believe, still serve as an entrepreneur in residence.
Yes, I do. So I go up every semester. I work with the students. I do office hours. I judge business plan competitions, help coach them through some of their startup ideas. And really, I think there's also this other piece of hospitality I think is important, is around awareness. Awareness of your customer, awareness of your environment, awareness of what's happening around you, that you can create more of that smoothness that really helps the focus be more on what you're trying to get done as opposed to any kind of uncomfortable X, Y, and Z. But yes, I love being able to go back up there. And of course, I always try to navigate going as early as I can in the fall semester, so get away from the winter, so go in September, and the latest part of spring, so I'm there in April.
So coming from Hawaii, are you the most popular person when you arrive on campus?
Of course. I always have a flower in my ear. No, it was funny. There were actually 11 people from my school that went to Cornell my year, so there were actually quite a few Hawaii people. But I had to kind of self-medicate when I was up there. I would actually secretly go to a tanning salon once a week, and it wasn't to get tan. You don't get tan going once a week. It was literally for the warmth and getting some of that vitamin E that you get, you know, and kind of just soaking in that warmth and making me kind of get back to baseline of normal.
You just reminded me that I know somebody else who spent many, many years in Washington State, and you know what he did? He confessed to me one day that he would watch telenovelas even though he didn't understand Spanish.
Because it felt warm.
Just to get the sun. Okay. So you graduate from Cornell. You have this foundation, this brainwashing of wonderful hospitality and how it can permeate through your personal and professional life. Did you always know you were going to come back, or what was the impetus to come back to Hawaii?
when I graduated, I wanted to come back to Hawaii, but it was kind of this unspoken thing that you shouldn't come back. If you wanted to do something different, there wasn't a place for you here. And so I felt like I didn't have a choice to come back, that I had to go to the mainland and go discover and be able to do whatever I wanted to with my career, and crossing fingers someday I could come back and retire. That was kind of the pathway that was in my head. Whether it was true or not, that was what was in my head.
That's too bad.
Yes. So yeah. I went to San Francisco, and I actually lived there for 11 years. I was in the hospitality space for the first 4 years of my career. You know, I had my quarter life crisis. I woke up and I said, you know, I'm not, this idea of adulting is not jiving with me. And the adulting piece was around, like, going to a job every day. I didn't feel connected to it. I didn't feel passionate. And so I really took a major right turn or a left turn. And that's when I started my entrepreneurial journey, working with a life coach, a career coach, and really figuring out what was I good at, what was I not good at, what did I like doing, what did I not like doing, and using those data points, which I think are super important for everybody as they're in their career, continuing to keep track of those four areas that can help you navigate better decision-making as to what your next move is going to be. But for me, it was a heavy, heavy turn into entrepreneurship, which is when I started my first company.
You know, I find you to be, based on our conversations, a pretty self-reflective person. So that's quite interesting that you went out of your way to hire and work with a professional life coach. That's really interesting.
She actually said this is really interesting. I'm the youngest person she'd ever worked with, because I was having a quarter life crisis.
You are an old soul.
Yeah, I am an old soul. Thank you. But she was used to working with more midlife crisis. And she said, you're so lucky you don't have these golden handcuffs. I was like, what the heck is a golden handcuff? She's like, you don't have a mortgage. You don't have kids. You don't have all these other pressures that really make it hard for people to make this hard left or hard right, because they have all these competing responsibilities where a lot of times people may be really good at something, but they don't like doing it. But now they've got these golden handcuffs because they're at a certain salary level. And to make that turn is going to massively change. And at that point, I wasn't making that much money anyway. So I might as well just like totally switch gears.
You had tin handcuffs.
Exactly, yes.
What I hope our listeners take away from that segment is that I wonder if there are other 25-year-olds out there, you know, give or take a few years, who might be going through the same thoughts and same journey. And I want to encourage them to seek help. That seeking help, whether it's a friend or someone that you hire and partner with, it's not a shame. It's actually courageous. So I hope that that's what our listeners catch on to.
And also, yes, I agree. And also doing more of those gut checks and having a better relationship with your gut. Just if something's not feeling right, dig in. Like, what's going on? Don't continue to create this like divide in the road of what you know you're passionate about, you're interested in, or just what feels good to you versus what you're actually doing.
So I met you when you were already back in Hawaii. And there was something that you said that has stuck with me for quite some time. You said, and I think this is indicative of the kind of person you are, the kind of rigor and planning and courage that you have. You said, Onyang, when I came back, I said, okay, so what are some tactical things that I'm going to do? And I don't know if you remember this. You said, I told myself that I would say yes to everything, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And you stuck to it. So tell me a little bit about your journey back and the plan that you made and how you navigated that. Because I wonder if there are some of our listeners who are considering coming back, have just come back, or struggling to kind of reacclimate themselves into the community, considering they've been gone maybe 5, 10, 15 years.
Yes. So I had built an app in San Francisco, a few apps.
Oh, you built
actually.
An app.
Right. Yes. So I built the number one wine app on the iTunes platform.
Of course it was wine.
Of course. So I really had a lot of experience and expertise in that arena. And so when I moved back, I thought really pragmatically about, you know, what can I be doing that I have something going on? Like, I'm not just coming home. Hey guys, I'm here. What can I do? So I really did have a company that I was working with that was, you know, building apps. And that was the kind of thing where even all the dentist office wanted an app. That's not the case anymore. But again, this was 10 years ago. And so when I came back, I thought, you know, how do I plug in? And the world, and I think this happens for a lot of people that grew up here, they think Hawaii time stays still. and that it's like you're just your high school friends and everything's the same. And granted, Hawaii can be a little bit behind the times sometimes with certain trends. Granted, I think that's also also adjusting with the internet and everyone's kind of aligned. But you know, I think people think that this time stays still. And for me, I had these great friend group, but I had really changed. You know, I was in my 30s. And I had had this incredible experience in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, in the tech world and entrepreneurship, all that other fun stuff. And one of the reasons I moved back was really thinking about that frustration I had when I graduated from college, that I didn't feel like I could move back. And falling in love with innovation, entrepreneurship in Silicon Valley, in the heart of it, thinking, why can't we have that here? And how can I help build an innovation ecosystem that can help other people come back here and really do anything they want? Because you can layer tech, innovation, entrepreneurship, startups into anything, small business, and it could be for any industry. And so it was really very door opening as well as additive, right? How do we grow the pie? And so when I came back, I thought, all right, I'm just going to meet everybody. I got asked to be on a nonprofit board, or, you know, I got asked to help run this thing called Hancelerator with Bert Lum and Ryan Ozawa. And it was really fun. It was kind of wild, wild west when there was probably one thing happening every week in the tech space. And so it was just saying yes and seeing how I could contribute. I started something called Han New Tech back in the day. This is 10 years ago. And it was a monthly event for pitches and party and people just creating. And I'm a big believer of the concept of collision, getting people, smart people in a room together and magic happens. And you just kind of get out of the way. And I'm still a big believer in that, even with our company today. And so just looking at how I could contribute and meeting just so many different types of people. And I think that's a big thing that I believe in around growing your community.
Your ability to be rocket fuel and have courage all comes together in 2017, when you partner with your co-founder, Brittany Hyde, and start Mana Up. You've been going a mile a minute. So have you ever looked back and said, aha, wow, that all makes sense. And that all contributed to now Mana Up, because it does to me right now.
There are many points in my life that all make sense now as to why Mana Up. And also having just come back from Cornell, really being kind of back in the hospitality industry as well, which all kind of comes back to 25 years ago. But yes, you know, seeing this idea of what innovation, startups, entrepreneurship can do for Hawaii, that initial idea of why I moved home, and for partial selfish reasons, I wanted smart people doing really cool things here. Right? Having that great community with people that are activated, that are engaged, that are doing things that can help support that life they want to live here. That was one of the reasons I wanted to help contribute to this ecosystem. And so with Mana Up, looking at what is that, you know, what are those regional strengths or competitive advantage that Hawaii does have that can make sense for companies to not just start here, but to stay here and thrive here, creating those jobs, creating that revenue, and really all that trickle down effect to have smart people doing really interesting things here. And so, you know, I think about even the things I was interested in at Cornell. I had my minor was in tourism, looking at host community and where do we create place-based types of industry that have a hospitality component that can make sense for a community. And so I think about that. That was super interesting to me while I was in school there, and full circle later, this is exactly what I'm doing when we look at regenerative tourism, regenerative ag, and again, looking at the key component to Mana Up, which I started with Brittany, around the brand of Hawaii, and that being that anchor to many of these businesses that can thrive here in Hawaii.
I believe that there's fundamentally two types of people in the world. The folks who will grow revenue, and the folks who will control expenses, right? It's just a philosophical thing. So to me, you are a great example of somebody who is focused on revenue. What I mean by that is solutions. What are our strengths? Hawaii as a brand, right? You want to be around smart people. You want to create more collision opportunities, mm-hmm. right? By bringing people together. So you co-founded in 2017, Mana Up, and it's an accelerator and venture fund for Hawaii-based products who want to scale globally with a mission to increase economic opportunity and jobs. I think that's really key, jobs, yes, for the people of Hawaii. So talk to us about some of the impact that you've made, you and Brittany have made, and your team, right? Because you didn't do it alone. You have a small but mighty team,
yes,
that you've made since 2017.
So in terms of the impact, when we started Mana Up was to help create, our kind of lofty grand goal was to create 100 companies based in Hawaii that were earning $10 million or more in annual revenue. So what would $1 billion do for Hawaii, and what would that look like from a job standpoint? And so it sounds like a lot of dollars and cents, but it really is, what does that mean for our community? And when you think about companies that are at 10 million or more, that's where you get the C-suite, director level, manager level positions. You think about any company, no matter what they're doing, there's still basic functions that have to happen, right? Operations, marketing, sales, HR, finance, all of those basic functions. And so when you think about creating this critical mass of opportunity in various sectors, whether they're finance, marketing, that's when people can start jumping around into different jobs, which is a good thing, because that creates growth, creates more experience, and creates that ability to jump ahead. I think a lot of times we have a little bit of that stagnant where people get that one job and then they stay there, right? Because they're scared, and because there's not this breadth of other positions that could be a different industry, but same function, right? I'll be able to jump that little half step up and then come back. And so that to me is a huge piece of that impact that we're creating. We're now 5 years in. We've had 63 companies come through our program.
That's incredible.
Thank you. We're about to announce our next 11 companies for cohort 7 in the next 3 weeks. And so, you know, looking at, we do an economic impact report every year. In 2020.
And I love that, yeah, because you have to have the data to validate your good work and allow you to pivot as needed. I love that you folks focus on the data so much. And not just about the economic impact, but the kinds of entrepreneurs that you've been able to support, right? Female, Native Hawaiian. So please continue.
Yes, a very incredible, diverse entrepreneur. And we go for the best entrepreneurs. You know, we've made very specific focus to create that diversity. And we're seeing that coming in. We had 135 applicants for cohort 7.
Wow.
So we have
135.
And this is cohort 7. So this isn't just the first year everyone's excited to figure out what the heck this thing is. We had 135. It keeps growing. It's a record-breaking year. Every year we have more and more applicants. A third of the companies that applied actually started their company in the last 12 to 18 months, which means it was pandemic-based. Whether you lost your job or you're saying, hey, now or never, I want to go for my dreams. That to me is such a positive message as to what's coming out of the pandemic from a silver lining standpoint. We're seeing a lot of innovation, a lot of entrepreneurial mindset to create jobs, create businesses, and to be really passionate about what they're doing and to totally switch gears like I did, you know, 20 years ago. And so, you know, looking at that diversity and looking at what these companies are doing, 60% of our companies are sourcing a raw ingredient in their product mix, meaning they're growing something ag-related. And that's super important as we look at value-add food, some of our health and beauty companies, and we think about the land here and what we're doing with that. So I'm very stoked about the numbers. They did $40.3 million in revenue. They did over 350 jobs. They had $18 million in exports, meaning dollars coming in from outside the state. And when we think about that, we think about tourism. Tourism is a piece of this. You think about all the people that physically come here to enjoy Hawaii and they spend money, right? That's outside dollars coming into our state to create economic impact, right? Those multipliers. That's amazing. But what about the millions of people, hundreds of millions of people who hope to come to Hawaii someday, came 25 years ago, are saving up still? All of those people who love Hawaii, we're the second most recognized brand in the world behind Coca-Cola. So how much bigger is that pie to complement tourism, right? So this is additive for all these people that aren't here right now that want to buy something to remind them of this aspirational brand, the brand of Hawaii. And so it's really exciting. We want to see that number grow. I want to see that 18 million grow heavily. I want to see our e-commerce numbers grow heavily and really looking at that was for a lot of these companies during the pandemic. 40% of our companies had an e-commerce, majority of the revenue from e-commerce pre-pandemic. Makes sense. A lot of them are in tourist areas. We had 10 million people coming here. You're buying a lot of stuff. Great. But after the pandemic, we're now at 70%. That's huge when you think about that massive shift to a strategy that's online that is addressing a way huger global market.
What I especially love about Mana Up is everything that you just described as well, but that it leverages our agricultural land, right? It's strengthening our workforce development. It's contributing to diversifying the economy, so the entrepreneurial ecosystem. But it's also, this is cheesy, it's also helping local folks realize their gifts, that they're not anything less than anyone else who live on a peninsula or on the mainland, but that we have many, many gifts, and to we can maximize and multiply our gifts to contribute to the state becoming stronger from the inside out.
Yes.
So when I think about Mana Up, to me, you folks represent access, equity, strength. I think of catalytic energy. I think of a multiplier, rocket fuel, all those things. And I also love something you folks recently created that is especially focused on the Native Hawaiian community. And I think it's called Hawaii Rising.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, the Hawaii Rising is a program that we launched with Shopify. It's called Build Native by Shopify. And it's their indigenous-focused area of the company. Really interesting. We're the third location to launch. The first was, of course, in Canada, where Shopify is based, addressing a lot of First Nations entrepreneurs. Second was New Zealand, Maori entrepreneurs, and Hawaii's the third. And it's just an incredible program. And I think also looking at the fact that this is an outside entity that's massively successful, global representation, and bringing these resources to Hawaii. And to your point earlier, Anyang, that we've always kind of seen ourselves as not second class, but that we're trying to keep up. And when you think about the brand of Hawaii being aspirational, we are first in class. We're looking at global trends happening around authenticity, transparency. People are flipping over the package. What's in this? Who's the entrepreneur? Going on Instagram. What are the founders? What are their values? And we are the best in class. And so many global trends happening around wellness, sustainability, health, culture, and all these things are coming together to really create that amazing mindset shift that we need to have, which we're shifting now to being the best. And again, being an aspirational brand that the world is looking to. So it's exciting. And I think even with looking at the 135 applicants we received and the hundreds we've also that have applied to Mana Up, you know, we only take 10 to 12 every year. So this Hawaii Rising program is just one of a few programs we launched this year to address pipeline and to be able to support more of these entrepreneurs as they're continuing to build their business, e-commerce, storytelling, other aspects of the business that can then help them continue to grow and ideally come into Mana Up very soon.
You're creating a collision playground, right? You're bringing the resources to them.
I'm going to have to make a shirt that says
collision
that.
Playground. Yeah. Yes, I would like a shirt and a visor. I'm big into visors. Let's take a short break and hear a message from our sponsor, Surfco Pacific. We'll be right back with Melly James, co-founder of Mana Up. Today's episode is presented by Subaru Hawaii. Dedicated to making the world a better place, their goal is to be more than a car company through its love promises. The Subaru Hawaii Love Promise is a vision to show aloha and respect to all people at every interaction. To spread the love promise as far as possible, they work with a diverse range of organizations that fall under the cause areas of the earth, learning, pets, and caring for and helping others. Subaru Hawaii believes in being a positive force in the communities where we live, work, and play, not just with donations, but with actions to set an example for others to follow. To learn more, visit SubaruHawaii.com. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we're talking story with Melly James, co-founder of Mana Up. So for Mana Up, since 2017, you've graduated 63 alumni companies in 6 cohorts, and you're about to launch your 7th cohort with 11,
yes.
Right? So within those, I think the categories of your alumni are food, fashion, home, and health and beauty. And some names that, I mean, I recognize: Hawaiian Pie Company, Banan, Big Island Coffee Roasters, Aloha Modern, Coco Moon, That stuff is really soft, by the way. Kokomo.
Buttery soft.
Buttery soft. Aloha de mele, hanale, and my favorite, jewels and gem. I want all the stuff in jewels and gem, right? So what I want to talk about next is that you started this accelerator with Brittany, but you also have a retail store, a fulfillment warehouse, a venture fund, and a showcase. How'd that happen? Was that the thought from the start?
And an online store.
Oh, and an online store.
So it wasn't, it wasn't. When Brittany and I started Mana Up, we knew that we were starting with the accelerator. And that's the key. That's like the guts of this whole thing, right? None of these companies are going to continue to grow and grow to global markets and be able to create that impact if we're not helping them solve their business challenges, which is what the accelerator does in the 6-month program. As we continued to grow, we knew we were going to be open to as things fell into our lap or it made sense. We did try a couple things that didn't work.
Because you like to say yes.
We like to say yes. But we have priorities. So, you know, we're very open to organic growth and also seeing when something's not working and pivot. And so as we're looking at these other things you mentioned, the venture fund, the fulfillment center, those are all resources and infrastructure that was super needed for the companies to grow. So as we started developing these relationships and they were growing, we thought, okay, what's holding them back now, right? And with the pandemic, with e-commerce, that was game-changing and life-saving for the companies as tourism kind of bottomed out for a while. And so they shifted online. And so what happened was, delivering pallets of goods to retail locations versus direct to consumer, packing boxes for individuals to ship to their homes is a completely different beast. So many of the companies were coming to us saying, hey, it's amazing, our sales are growing, but I'm drowning in packing boxes. 50% of my time is used packing boxes. I can't grow my business. So we said, okay, let's figure this out. So that's how the fulfillment center happened. The venture fund, really looking at capital. Where we saw a lot of capital, mostly in tech companies, real estate here, et cetera, there wasn't as much opportunity for product-based businesses. But we were seeing from a global trend standpoint happening that was growing on the mainland. About $10 billion has been invested in consumer packaged goods companies. $7 billion of it has been in the last 4 years. So there's an upward trend. So this wasn't just, oh, hey, we think this is kind of cool. We're going to go start this venture fund. This was super in line with what's happening in the mainland, and especially in big hubs like Austin, Texas, and other San Francisco, et cetera. We were very aligned, and we're really excited right now with the fund. We raised $6.3 million. And we're making quite a few investments already. Thank you. And just some incredible companies that are at that point now, absolutely needing capital to expand and accelerate their growth.
Your commitment was not just to these companies to help them during the 6-month program, but really about their ongoing and scalable future. Widening, deepening, extending the runway. And you've been growing and you've been diversifying as the opportunities have come your way, but as your alumni's needs have matured and come to your attention.
Yes. We're going deeper and broader, I guess. And
yes.
So, you know, looking even
You're doubling down.
Yeah, we're doubling down, tripling down. So even looking at ag, the fact that 60% of our companies are sourcing an ingredient that's grown in Hawaii in their product mix, and looking how important regenerative ag is, local production for local consumption, but also looking at value add, shelf-stable products that are good for export, that continue to bring in new dollars into our state. So we've gotten involved with the Wahiwa Food Product Development Center, looking at the high-pressure processing machine, HPP, that's now coming to the islands. That's going to be game-changing for the companies. This was part of a suggestion and strategy that was part of an ag recovery hui we were a part of during the pandemic. HPP literally can extend shelf life without adding any chemicals to a product. So you look at the guacamole at Costco that somehow lasts 2 months, and you're wondering, why is the guacamole I make at home only last half an hour? That's HPP. So it's super interesting what's going to be happening for a lot of our value-add food products with this machinery coming in that, you know, we've been a part of helping to develop out more of these resources and manufacturing infrastructure for food here.
So what would you say is the near and long-term future for Mana Up and our local companies?
I would say from an opportunity standpoint, looking at a tailwind, right? Well, a lot of times we talk about headwinds, like things that are working against us, but we rarely talk about a tailwind. And what's happening right now that's creating this why now, why is now the time, why is it working, is because of these global trends happening around authenticity, transparency, connection to culture, that consumers are looking at micro brands. Back in the day, 10 years ago, it was all about legacy brands. You didn't trust, you know, some weird new brand on the shelf. Looking at Instagram and our phones, that access to data that we have in moments, we can see what does a company stand for, who they are. And so what's happening is consumers are now choosing micro brands, new brands, the brands that really align with their values over these legacy brands. So that's where it's getting very exciting from a consumer standpoint and from a revenue standpoint. So I think that's a real opportunity for these companies. Our storytelling is another opportunity. How do we take back the way the world learns about Hawaii? How do we share these stories succinctly, of course, as to why they're special, different, better, more authentic, healthy, all these good things that people are looking for. And so I think that's that real opportunity. Moving forward, knowing that we have limited resources here, that we don't want to become the next manufacturing state in totality, how do we start to navigate creating those jobs here, creating those headquarters here, those C-suite level, director level jobs, but also knowing from a growth standpoint, not everything is going to be made here, and that's okay. How do we think about and navigate the growth of the business and the platforms that more people and consumers are going to get to know these companies? Those are all amazing opportunities. I think for us, as we're building 63 companies now, 23 of them are over $1 million in annual revenue. That's so exciting. They're not leaving to follow the money, to follow the customers, to follow the talent. They are staying here. And so what are these new sets of challenges that these companies are having that are totally different now that they're at, you know, a few million in revenue, that are very different than when they came through Mana Up originally? So that's an exciting part for us from a challenge standpoint. We just launched our Wayfinder series program that's focused on companies that are over $1 million in sales, and addressing specifically problems and challenges that they're having with this growth, whether that be recruiting, right? So how are you recruiting more and how do you create that culture? Looking at EOS, that's one we're doing right now around entrepreneur operating systems. How are you creating those structures, core values, scorecards? How do you create that infrastructure that most times is for these larger companies, but really as these businesses are turning into small, medium-sized companies, how to create that infrastructure so they're ready to really explode. So those are some of the things I'm seeing, which we're really excited about.
I so look forward to the continued collision that you and Brittany and everyone at Mana Up is going to make. And I can't even imagine what we'll be talking story about this time next year.
Me too. Thanks.
So let's switch gears a little bit.
All right.
And I find the partnership between you and Brittany quite interesting. So we all have heard, you know, good, bad, nightmare, dream stories about partnering with people and going into business, right? When I look at you and Brittany, and when I've talked to you folks individually and separately, what I notice is a really unique and symbiotic relationship. You know your strengths and weaknesses. She knows her strengths and weaknesses. You folks absolutely keep each other in check. And your communication style is very direct, but loving, succinct, and action-oriented. And you also continue to remind each other of the why and what to focus on. And the reason why I want to listen to you on this is I'm hoping that it helps those of our listeners out there that might be struggling with a business partner, might be thinking about what kind of business partner to take on if they want to start a business. I find this to be a very challenging topic, and you two somehow have done it well. You're not perfect. No one's perfect, but you have this very symbiotic relationship. So how did you find each other, and how did this magic happen? And what do you think is, I don't want to say secret, but what do you think is the rigor behind this symbiosis?
So the way we found each other, Brittany moved to Hawaii with her husband, who's Maui born and raised. And I met her, and I just liked her. And I had no initial interest to start a business with her. I just liked her as a person. And as I was starting to formulate this general early concept of what Mana Up could be, I was having lunch with a woman who's just an incredible entrepreneur and someone that I think has been very successful and I look up to. And so sharing kind of some initial thoughts about Mana Up, and she said, you know, Melly, you're good at a lot of things, but you know, you're really not good at a lot of things, and we're both pretty aware of them. And I said, okay, yes, I understand that. She's like, you know, and I think that Brittany would be really good at the things that you're not so good at. I said, oh, that's interesting. Maybe you guys should get lunch. I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I invited her to lunch, and we started talking about the original initial concepts of Mana Up, and this person couldn't have been more correct in really looking at complementary skill sets. And I think that's a big piece of, as you're looking for a co-founder, if you haven't already selected one and you're all that fun stuff, but really looking at what are you good at? What do you like doing versus what are you not good at? What do you don't like doing? And making sure that your business partner can fulfill those gaps to create, you know, truly, I can't believe sometimes, I mean, Brittany really absolutely loves doing the kind of stuff I absolutely hate. I'm like, you want to do that? Awesome. All right, I'm going to go do this.
And vice versa.
Yes. Totally.
There's some things that you do for the for Mana Up that she absolutely doesn't want to do.
Yes. And I think the way that we work together is there's just an absolute distrust. I trust her. I like the way she thinks. I like the way she problem solves. We think through things very similarly. And sometimes different, but I respect the way she thinks about things. And so I think it's the same for any partner in a marriage. It's, you know, that I respect the way you think through challenges. So when you come out with a decision, I think, you know, they thought through that thoroughly.
You don't always agree. But you respect them.
Yeah, the data points, like all the pieces that are coming into the decision making. We also really like each other. You know, I think there's always that test you make with, you know, if you see your co-founder across a party and you're kind of like, oh, I don't want to talk to them. I want to talk to other people. That's not good, right? So she's literally like my favorite person in the room. So, Aww. Yeah, I mean, if I see her, I'm beelining it to Brittany because I want to talk to Brittany. I mean, I also want to network and talk
debrief.
To other people and yes. Yeah, debrief. And Yeah. We just have a lot of fun. There's always laughter on the call. We take things seriously, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We're big believers in radical candor, providing feedback, you know, with love and immediate and moving on, so that we can get to what we're really trying to get done, which is, you know, all the awesome things that Mana Up is doing. And so that to me, I think has been a key pieces to what's created our friendship, our partnership, that continues to evolve. And granted, Mana Up looks very different today than it did when we started. But that we're very clear about what our goals were and that we were really open to things continuing to adjust. And we continue to check in with each other.
So what I heard was trust, respect, likability. You genuinely like each other. You have shared goals and shared values and also fun. It's important to have fun with each other.
Yes.
Yes. There's a common perception that millennials and Gen Z are a bunch of lazy words, right? We don't need to rattle out those words, right? But there are some negative connotations to these generations. But I noticed that House of Mana Up, your warehouse, and also your marketing team, they are millennial and Gen Z. Mm-hmm. And many of them have stayed with you folks for multiple years. So they defy the stereotype. They defy the negative stereotype. Why do you think that is? What are you doing? What magic sauce are you giving them?
Well, I can't tell you all the magic sauce. Anyway, I might lose them. I'm just kidding. I think what's been really a key piece to our team and to be attracting younger generation is I think that a lot of people really want to believe in and really that shared vision. What are we doing to help Hawaii? And looking at the various facets of the business and creating that impact that's measured, we can see the changes in the businesses. So I think for a lot of these Gen Z millennials, wanting to contribute to something bigger than themselves, wanting to feel like they're part of something global, something community-based, is what I'm hearing, and that's so a part of who we are. And we really make that a deep piece of our culture, and what's important to us as we recruit, as we celebrate wins, and as we engage with each other, you know, really on a daily basis.
I think another thing that you haven't yet said is, and I mean this in the best way, you kind of throw them into the fire, meaning you give them a tremendous opportunity. They say, are you sure I can do this? I'm scared. And then you look at them and say, uh-huh, you can. I'm behind you. And so they are scared, but they appreciate that opportunity.
Yes. Brittany and I are both big believers in giving people opportunity. And even if they're small tasks that then turn into much bigger things, that people get to know more what their strengths are by being able to do them directly. And so I'm never the person that says, it's all mine, I have to do it, you know, let's keeping that bottleneck. And that's how teams grow. But it also, I think, really helps create that morale, and that belief that really gets started early with people where that get these opportunities to trust themselves, trust their decision making, but also know that we're here to support them. And if, you know, something doesn't go totally correct, or in the right way we were hoping, that's okay. But we're continuing to learn.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So switching gears again, I personally don't know how you find the time to sleep or play pickleball, because I think you're...
I don't play pickleball.
What's the ball
I
you play?
I play paddle tennis.
Oh, okay, right. You play paddle tennis, but you're like kind of serious about it, right?
Obviously.
So I don't know, of course, you want to win. I don't know when you sleep or make time for paddle tennis, because not only are you creating more collision opportunities at Mana Up for all of us, but you're also the president of HVCA, the Hawaii Venture Capital Association. What's up with that?
Well, it's, you know, it's an amazing organization that started in 1988. So it's been 30 something years, if I do my math correct. but looking at how do we connect dots? And so I'm a big believer in, you know, we have all these silos in the past that really have to be working together now to create true change. And so HVCA has been this overarching organization that really does connect the dots between investors, our business community, entrepreneurs, government. And when I had the opportunity to not only join the board, but to become president, this was 7 years ago, I absolutely took it, because I really felt that so much more of our community needs to learn what's happening. And it's such a positive message. One of the things HVCA does is our annual Hawaii Entrepreneur Awards, which, thank you to Hawaii Business Magazine, features, you know, we do a 16-page spread. It's just an incredible storytelling of each of these entrepreneurs that were honored in various categories. We have 13 categories. But I think ultimately, it helps our community see what's happening with innovation, people starting companies, what solutions are they creating, what inefficiencies are they solving for. And I always get so much out of being part of this organization that I hope will continue to be at the forefront of connecting dots again, even with legislation. And we're very excited for this year with some of the bills that were passed that were really helpful for our ecosystem. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I have a big smile on my face because when you talk about HVCA, the spirit of it and connecting dots and breaking down silos and bringing awareness, I truly believe that's the spirit of this podcast. So that's why I have a big old smile on my face. Awesome. So I believe that everyone has at least one quality that is like their magic. You get plenty. So, but when I think about you, to me, your magic is what I would call fearlessness. But what I would like to ask you to talk about is how do you squash that voice, that negative naysayer imposter syndrome voice, to make yourself so fearless in all of your endeavors? Because there was a recent conversation you and I had, and we talked about imposter syndrome, that voice, the negativity, and how to squash that. And, you know, we talked about how most people would not think that you and I have fears, especially you. And you talked to me about some of the tactics and some of the mindset that you trained yourself on when you were launching Mana Up with Brittany. So tell us what you practice and what kind of mindset and what kind of philosophies you have to kind of own your fearlessness.
So yes, I remember Mana Up being this huge endeavor we were taking on. It had never existed before. So there was no template. And I definitely struggle from negative talk and sometimes questioning myself. And I think for me, I started something called a 5-minute journal that was recommended to me by a friend that really focuses on, you know, what you're looking forward to, what are some small wins that you've had every day, and really focusing on that kind of positivity that can really help you get through some of those ups and downs and the negative self-talk. That to me was really, really game-changing to continue each day by looking at the good things that happen. What am I trying to accomplish, right? What are the couple things that are going to be a big deal for me, even a small deal for me, that kept chipping away at what we were building, as opposed to making it this overwhelming thing that you can easily talk yourself out of. And so that was a big piece. I think for me now, I struggle with negative self-talk because sometimes it helps me get that whip that on my back that gets stuff done. And so I was actually kind of addicted to some of the negative self-talk, to be totally honest, because I thought, well, how did I get all this stuff done? It must have been because I was so hard on myself that I wouldn't stop working till it got done. Or I would say, who are you until you get this done if you don't get this accomplished? It was kind of not good. And so I've been actually working on that this past year, knowing that that's not sustainable, and that I can get the work done without being so hard on myself, and that I can be focusing on more of the positive aspects of, you know, community, my family, and what we're building, and my partnership, that isn't so much about aligning accomplishments with self-worth. I'm a big believer in meditation. So I've started my meditation practice about 8 months ago, Vipassana meditation, which I do every morning, that I think has been, not I think, I know has been very game-changing for me in starting my day, and being focused and feeling as I come out into the morning after meditating in a really great mindset, just to kind of take on the world, but in a very positive way. And that's very fulfilling and sustainable for me.
Okay, Melly James, she of the fearlessness, but also with the foundation of the 5-minute journal and the meditations on a daily basis, which I'm very impressed with. My last question for you today before we wrap it up, which I've been asking folks, is what would be your superpower and why?
A superpower I would love to have would be time travel.
And why is that?
I just want to be in so many places at the same time. I'm very focused, but how awesome would it be if in like a blink I could be in Rome and go have an awesome dinner and then come back home and get some work done?
That's really cool. Well, thank you, Melly. This was super fun, and I hope you have a beautiful day today.
You too. Thank you, Anyang.
You've been listening to the Hawaii Business Podcast, presented by Surfco Pacific. All episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Stitcher, and of course at hawaiibusiness.com. If you enjoyed today's interview, go to your podcast platform of choice and hit the subscribe button, and also leave us a review. Positive reviews encourage others to tune in as well, and that raises the tide of meaningful conversation towards solutions in Hawaii. I'm your host, Anyang Nakata. Thank you for joining us today. Be safe, be well, and see you next time.